director with the World Bank, and her concerns. The next speaker is Mr. Peter Kim, who is a co-founder of the Analog Forum. Peter has over 30 years' experience as a manager. He's had experience in starting corporations from scratch and taking it up to $500 million in annual revenue. Peter feels comfortable in many locations in your large organization and small organization, from the boardroom to research and development to supervising systems analysts and even arm wrestling with full ontologists at the drop of a hat. Peter is currently involved with a number of efforts linked with Adam Scheier involving the amplification of human capabilities in the context of ontology and semantic learning. I'd like to give you Peter P.M. Peter?
Thank you, Bob. Good morning. Ready? Okay. This is what I'm going to go through within the next half an hour. First of all, of course, a lot of new faces here, so I will take some time to tell everyone what is Ontolog. We are also known as Ontolog Forum, who we are, what we do, and so on, and then explain the series of events of which this is actually the last piece that we called Ontologizing Ontolog. It's the last piece in terms of an event, definitely not the last of what we're going to work on. Some purpose and goals of that whole exercise, some challenges, opportunities, and reflections that we have gleaned through this series of events, as well as the last 4.5 years of Ontolog. So I will not go through the slides. They are just here for completeness reasons. But Ontolog was established in April 2002. It actually had a precursor, four people, Leo Oberst, Jack Park, Adam Chaya, and myself. At that time, we were all working for the same company, and we formed a group called SOUL, S-O-U-L, to stand for Semantics, Ontologies, and the Universal Language. At that time, we were specifically trying to address an issue at a standards group in OASIS, which later became the group called Universal Business Language Technical Committee. The group there, which was headed by John Bosak. If you guys know John Bosak, John is generally known as the father of XML, was heading that group, and he actually did philosophy at college. And we were joking with him, and we say, if you want to be a universal language soon enough, this has to be an ontological engineering effort. And there we go, we started talking, and Kurt Conrad, who was on the original XML team, so thank him for giving us XML, then joined us, and soon enough, we found that we were sort of spun off from the UBL group, because we were talking about things that are like 3 or 4 years down the road, and they needed a standard for a business vocabulary like yesterday. So the timing wasn't right, and so they kicked us out. They sort of drove us into the virtual wilderness, and we formed a virtual community then. And the three of us, myself, Leo, and Kurt. So I'm actually a collaborator. I'm sort of a staunch supporter and a person that's totally inspired by Doug Engelbart's work, and everything I do sort of is modeled after some of his vision and mission. So I'm trying to support some sort of activity along those lines. Leo is the resident ontologist. I mean, if we have any ontological questions, we'll go ask him. And then Kurt is the standards person at that time, at least. So that we formed this group to help move ontological engineering and things related to ontologies into the mainstream, particularly through standardization process. And we were trying to sort of get a foot into the door through Universal Business Language TC. So we ended up sort of getting ourselves be in a position to advise and give recommendations to the UBL effort. And of course, since then, we've done a few more things. I mean, you can't sort of stay still in 4.5 years, so we've done a few more things. So over the years, we have slowly developed a culture, and now we are doing like weekly conference calls, monthly invited virtual speaker events, scheduled technical discussions. We have specific projects like, I mean, the CCT rep was the EBXML core component type representation in first order logic. That was one exercise. Health ontology, that's something Bob Smith is heading. We responded to the national RFI request to make recommendations for the National Health Information Network. We collaborated with NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and pulled together an Upper Ontology Summit. And I mean, we were lucky we got almost, I mean, all the important people into the same room to agree to something, albeit, I mean, a sort of baby step, but it was a very important agreement that we reached. We do event podcast, so everything that we deliver actually gets captured and archived in a collaborative work environment that we take as a dynamic knowledge repository, and we make that available. And now this exercise is, I mean, now that we've got this body of knowledge, I mean, the knowledge, not just some files, but I mean, a network of people, some processes, and of course, a lot of artifacts, what can we do with them? And for the last 3 months or so, we were running this exercise called Ontologizing the Ontolog Content. And this is the 11th event of the exercise. I mean, the past 10 events, you'll probably be able to look up at the Ontolog site. So if you're not already a member, come see what we are doing at the Ontolog Wiki. On the sign-up sheet today, there's a space that you can check off if you want to join us. So much. Yes. I actually will. I mean, towards the end, I have a slide that's the English version of the Chinese. So, what are communities of practice anyway? We call ourselves a virtual community of practice. Essentially, I mean, I take John Seely Brown of Xerox PARC's definition as sort of the classic, and say it's not an organization. It's just some people that have worked together. It's not a team, not a task force, not even authorized and identified, but they're peers in execution of some real work, and they have a need to learn about what each other knows so that they can do their work better. So this is Ontolog. We are not just ontologists. We're definitely not just ontologists. Within the Ontolog group, I mean, a few sort of types stand out more than others. I mean, of course, they are ontologists, and then they're standards developers, and they're like knowledge management professional librarians and the like. But communities of practice is just the beginning, as far as we are concerned, by forming virtual communities. Of course, it allows us to bring the right people together and allow these people to understand over time what the real expertise these other people have, who they can work with, who they can trust, who who they can trust, I mean, how they work, and so on and so forth. And of course, to do real work, we still need processes, we still need effective organization, but essentially, if we break from the traditional sort of brick and mortar setting and into a virtual setting. And this is one organizational form that I like very much. It's from Bob Johansson and Rob Swigart, a couple of colleagues of mine back at the Institute for the Future, where I was working for in the mid-90s. Essentially, they postulated an organizational form, which I guess everyone is probably well aware, they call the fishnet organization. Essentially, you've got a pool of resources and you can pick up like temporary hierarchies out of the fishnet and to leverage or to take advantage of specific needs. So it's a temporary hierarchy that can be formed, and once the opportunity is over, then you can sort of the resources can go back. I mean, this is the type of organizational form that works real well with us. And if we try to capture Ontolog in one picture, I mean, this is my attempt of saying that it's sort of like Doug Engelbart meeting John McCarthy in a tavern having a dialogue. I mean, the two sort of classic paradox between the augmented perspective and the sort of classic AI perspective on how computers can help us. I mean, they both have great intentions, and I think after 50 years, it finally dawned upon us, and the technology is mature enough that these things can actually work. So we have actually been doing a lot of both. I mean, we've got people in the community that says, I mean, we have to axiomatize everything. I mean, go first order logic, go common logic. And then we've got what we have today, I mean, looking at the softer side on the human side of things. And if you look back on our charter, I mean, the original charter actually said formal and informal ontology. I mean, guess how difficult it was just to slip the informal in there among the ontologists. So this was a picture from the March 15 event we called the Upper Ontology Summit. If you recognize some of the names there, we actually did get like Doug Leonard, Adam Peace, Nicola Guarino, Aldo Gangami, Michael Gruninger, John Bateman, Barry Smith, Matthew West. I mean, these are sort of the big names in, and we call them the custodians of publicly available upper ontologies. And these people actually came together and issued a joint communique. And it's a huge effort, which we are all very proud of. Again, I mean, a lot of the information is available from our site. The talks were captured in audio, it's on podcast and so on. NIST hosted us at Gaithersburg, Maryland, which was great, a nice place to be doing a thing like that. And besides just working with the community, since Ontolog sits on an infrastructure, of course, I mean, this is not a plug, but I mean, I actually host that infrastructure called sim3.net. Within sim3.net, we've got a whole bunch of other communities working on there. Protégé, I mentioned, there's a collaborative work environment, environment development group. That's Doug Engelbart's bootstrapping community. There's the e-government collab incubator. This e-government DRM data reference model work that's driven out of OMB, I mean, right from the White House. We've got NIST, we've got IMS, that's Intelligent Manufacturing System. Some of us from manufacturing. Intelligent Manufacturing System doing the work, a project called MPOS. MPOS is Manufacturing Pattern Ontology for the Extended Service Enterprise. So I mean, that's sort of very related, relevant work, I mean, in the manufacturing arena. We've got like the American Council for United Nations Universities Millennium Project, which is sort of a future studies group. There's Digital Art Ontology with a music professor, and then there's hosting of like Sumo, which is a suggested upper merged ontology cards. That's one of our effort, joint effort between CIM3 and Stanford Medical Informatics in hosting Protege in a collaborative ontology development service. So besides just an internal to the community, like for example, in our search, we could allow a search within Ontolog. We could search across the SIM3.net infrastructure, or, and of course, this is a Google search. We can search across the web. This is sort of one picture I try to depict. I mean, this joint effort in the collaborative ontology development service and infrastructure. Essentially, we host a Protege server on a tier one infrastructure. Actually, SIM3.net sits on one of the top 10 internet infrastructures in the world. We were lucky. I mean, those guys, I mean, we were co-located. They weren't top 10 when we first started. But so it's a great facility. We've got a group called the ONTech working group. Pat Cassidy, who's on the phone with us right now, is the chair of a group which is essentially U.S. government ontology taxonomy coordinating working group, and they are trying to be sort of one of the first guinea pigs in doing collaborative ontology development on this infrastructure. So who is who are the people that would visit us? I mean, earlier I was saying on that one slide, we have about, over the 4 years, we have about 160 members and from about 18 countries. Actually, there's a lot more because most people don't register, turns out. And if you look at that, I mean, over, let's say, the last year or so, we peaked at about like 250,000 hits every month, monthly downloads, maybe peaks at about maybe almost 40 gigabytes per month, and we have, I mentioned like 650,000 hits a month, and visits probably like anywhere from 50 to maybe 70,000 visits. So it's definitely made by more than 160 people. And this is a chart of where these people come from, and their places. I can't even name a city. Huge sort of crowd from Europe visiting with us. Japan, China, Australia, New Zealand, Eastern Europe, and Russia, and so on. So that's why I was explaining, most of our virtual events actually have anywhere from 10 to 40 people attending synchronously. But then our asynchronous archives actually has a much longer tail than we had originally intended. And even today, after like 2 or 3 years from, for example, Adam P's Sumo tutorial, every month about maybe 200 to 300 people would download that audio tutorial. So the ontologizing ontolog, I mean, what's the purpose? Of course, to provide better access to the body of knowledge, the body of knowledge, again, is not just the knowledge artifacts, not the documents, not the multimedia files, but also the tools, the process, and the people. And we want to use the opportunity to explore the landscape and the state of the art of both the technologies and approaches on how this could be done, and so on and so forth. And lastly, to build up enough interest and momentum to really do something. I mean, hopefully, I mean, we try to convince people to fund us. If they don't, then at least we want to convince people to do this voluntarily, because we think it's worth the while. And the goal is that we can engage a whole cross-section of people. So far, we've got Bob and Denise heading off a project called the Texel Thesaurus Project, using like concept extraction and clustering type techniques. Jack Park has spoken and offered like subject map, federation of ontologies, and some of the tools called Open Iris, Iris that SRI has developed. IBM offered UIMA, which is the unstructured information management architecture that they are very big on these days, in trying to sort of cull what is out there in freely on the sort of wild web, and try to make sense of them. I mean, based sort of formalizing a lot more than what the Fuxonomy people are doing. And of course, Pat Cassidy was just talking about like a week and a half ago on upper ontology, common upper ontology approaches, maybe an extension of that, by sort of moving first to a controlled, defined vocabulary using the Longman English Dictionary, controlled defining vocabulary as a basis for that. So it's very interesting. But even better, besides getting the exposure to all these different approaches, is that we hope we can do some integrated methodologies that is better than any part of the individual approach. And I truly believe, I mean, Bob or Denise, Michael Maximilian, Jack, Patrick, Adam, David Ferrucci, they've all alluded to this all along. I mean, if you go back to each of those talks, I mean, they actually say that, I mean, these technologies are available now, and this is not the only thing, and you can actually work with the others. So again, no one has taken on a project like this, and we want to start with within the community. So what are the challenges? I mean, if we are trying to develop ontological engineering solutions or applications, timing always seems to be the greatest challenge. I mean, how soon do we want the solution? I mean, is the technology really there? Ontology or ontological engineering has always given people the impression that it's out there somewhere, it's not quite here yet. So that's the one of the biggest challenge. The next challenge that I can see is, I mean, there's always a tension on people who are developing applications for other people versus people who are developing applications for machine agents, because they are looking for totally different ways to express the ontologies, different ways to represent knowledge, and so on and so forth. And another challenge is people have been making value judgments on, I'm doing formal ontology, you're doing informal ontology, and with an implication, or some people gathers the implication that, I mean, this is better than, or formal is better than informal, or, I mean, reversely, I mean, informal is more comprehensive than formal, because you can never capture everything in informal ontologies, and so on. I mean, same thing with upper versus sort of mid-level or domain ontologies. I mean, whether, I mean, there's no value on upper or lower ontologies. The value proposition and metrics should, I mean, if you ask me, should be just the answer to this, a very simple question. Does it solve my problem? Of course, I'm trained as an engineer, so maybe, and evidently not a philosopher, nor even a scientist, and that's why I say this. I mean, challenge me. But then, I mean, I think one of the very major challenge is that we need to be precise, but then we need to be holistic. And culturally, we are actually not very good at both, at either of them. Because we need to be precise in that a lot of real life things aren't really that precise. We need to be holistic, but all our training tells us that, I mean, if you can't tackle your problem, reduce it until it's bite-sized. And that sort of go against the entire grain of how ontological engineering should have been approached. And I think these are the challenges. And so, I mean, to reduce that, I would just say it's a knowledge gap. I mean, it's quite synonymous with what Kurt was telling us all morning, that, I mean, do people understand the problem or understand what problem they're trying to solve? Because if your semantic application is to develop a reference standard, doing it in RDF isn't going to cut it, or doing it in RDL isn't going to cut it because, I mean, it's not expressive enough. Or, and if you're doing transaction processes, maybe you don't even need sort of formal ontological model as such, as much as you need to just standardize and express it in database schemas or a XML schema. I mean, UBL is doing a great job. I mean, trying to define a vocabulary whereby people can start exchanging purchase orders and invoices. I mean, they don't quite need sort of a all-purpose ontology for it. Information mapping or harmonization, or are you doing machine-to-machine interoperation? Do you need machine inferencing? Are you doing human learning and knowledge discovery? I mean, the whole, let's say, Texothesaurus project aims at improving the access to the ontolog body of knowledge by maybe improving search, recall, discovery. Maybe with that kind of a scenario, I mean, we don't need first order logic, but we definitely want to go by the recommendation that Pat gave us, is to maybe start with a controlled defining vocabulary, whereby once that defining vocabulary gets mapped into an upper ontology, all of a sudden everything is defined. We don't have to reinvent the wheel again. Okay. So, and do we know how to approach these, and particularly how to put together the right resources? Because there are not a lot of ontologists around, not a lot of people who actually have enough knowledge across the board to put a piece together these solutions. So, I mean, where to get funding and so on. So, the opportunities are, I mean, all these visions are just right around the corner. I mean, after probably 50 years or maybe even more, for the engineers, we are actually going to be able to make something that impacts billions of people, not just the few hundred or the few thousand who are interested enough to stay in the lab. For marketeers, there's a multi-billion dollar market right around the corner. My recommendations to them is please don't kill it by hyping it up, because I mean that's a sure way to kill it. So some reflections is nothing replaces everything. I mean, I didn't say this. Richard Dalton, one of my colleagues at back at IFTF, again, we are just layering learnings and research over the years, and they just pile up. I mean, even when you look at Windows, you still see DOS, and you still see some BuildJoy, Unix somewhere down there, and it's all going to be there. So don't sort of cut on each other. The Tao says it all from my culture. Live with the duality. I mean, the cathedral and the bazaar, the discipline versus the creativity, and so on. We are not bound to choose one or the other. And I guess Lao Tzu has it figured out like 2,500 years ago. I mean, this is the English, one of the probably 5,000 English translations of what I had at the backdrop. This is the beginning of the Tao Te Ching, which says, I mean, 2,500 years ago, that the way that can be spoken is not the constant way, or you can't really articulate, I mean, the sort of truth or the way. And for names, they won't be constant. The nameless was the beginning. A thousand things actually was everything. I mean, and the named is sort of makes them become things. You can't name them. They won't be things. And incidentally, that was among one of the slides, slide 4 of 29 of the first presentation that Leo, Jack, and myself presented to UBL. So this is an important slide. I mean, it didn't have this Chinese backdrop then. So Ontolog's key differentiation is we are a community. We are not answerable to anyone. We can do whatever we want as long as, I mean, we are explicitly guided by our charter and IPR policy, and implicitly guided by our professional integrity. So will we be able to make the best of these opportunities? Maybe let me make a conjecture. I would say it just depends on our attitude towards sharing. If we are willing to share, I think a lot of good things will come. So some links there didn't show up quite well, but this slide is on the session page, and they're clickable. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you, Peter, for an extremely broad and comprehensive view.